Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us today to answer your gardening questions is our expanded panel of gardening experts. Greg Ward runs Ward's Nursery, a lawn and garden resource in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Fred Breglia is the director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. Bob Graves, co-owner of Fadigan's Nursery in Latham, New York, is a horticulturalist and an avid hands-in-the-dirt gardener for 40 years. And Carrie Ann Mendez is, well, that's what it says. And Carrie Ann Mendez is director of marketing for Fadigan's Nursery. Carrie is a garden consultant, writer, teacher, and lecturer focusing on time-saving gardening techniques, workhorse plant material, and organic practices. Greg, Fred, Bob, Carrie, welcome to the Vox Pop. Nice to have you all here.
It's great to be back.
Good to be here.
I guess we're in full swing in gardening season, eh?
Oh, boy.
Yes, we are.
All right, the phone number to call is 1-800-348-2551. It's 1-800-348-2551. Jump in line now. You can also post your comments at the bottom of today's Vox Pop show page on the Vox Pop section of our website. It's wamc.org/VoxPop. Or you can comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/WAMC radio, or you can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. And that is, that's that. All right, before we get to the phone calls, anybody with anything they would like to get off their chests?
Well, I always have something I'd like to get off my chest, right?
All right, so, well, let's keep it clean.
Okay, on that note, we have another Live at Landis concert coming up on Friday. That'll be tomorrow, and it starts from 7 to 10. Admission is $10 to get in, and this time it'll be Jamie Kent and the Tom Healy Band. And we're going to have both of them kicking it off tomorrow at the Meeting House, newly renovated Meeting House, overlooking the entire Schoharie Valley. There's a huge deck. There's indoor seating. Rain or shine, the show will go on, and it's a BYOB, bring your own basket.
Fair enough.
And, next day, I'm getting up in the morning and teaching a pruning workshop, and there's still openings for that. So anyone that is listening that wants to learn hands-on with me, Fred, at the Landis Arboretum, if you don't get a hold of us and get in time to register, just show up. It's going to be 9 to 12 at the Landis Arboretum in the library. So hope to see you there.
Great. Greg?
We're just going at it. Lots of gardening to do. I finally am catching up a little bit, harvesting some peas, mulching, edging the garden. Fred mentioned pruning. You know, pruning is really a great thing to be doing right now. There's a lot of different, especially spring flowering shrubs that can be thinned and reduced so they don't get too carried away later on.
How about you, Bob and or Carrie Ann?
Well, we've seen a lot of damage in our area recently because of all the storms and trees down and people wondering, and this is a question that comes up all the time, and I'm sure, Fred, you get it all the time, is they have a wound on a tree and they're wondering if they should put something on the wound. And
yeah,
I think we're all in agreement that you don't use any gloppy tars or silicones or any concrete or anything. The best thing to do is to make the appropriate cut on that wound and allow it to heal itself.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, we have a full bank of calls, so let's get right to them at 800-348-2551. We'll start off the show with Eileen in Saugerties. Eileen, you're first.
Hi, gang. I have a blue hydrangea it's been in a pot since I bought it, although I did transplant it right away to a bigger pot when I bought it, which is about 15 inches across. The hydrangea itself is about 2 feet high above the soil, and it's had lovely blue blossoms on it for a month or so. They're turning green now, so I'm wondering if that means I should cut them off and plant it into the ground, or what do you think?
Well, probably that, most likely that endless summer selection seems to be the most popular one out there. And so those do repeat bloom. And yes, deadheading the older blooms, the greener ones would be recommended, but it may be putting out some new buds. So it's possible to keep it in the pot for the summer. They do work as container plants. And then you could just, you know, wait till September or even October to put it out.
Once before, when I had the same kind of blue hydrangea, the same size, I put it into the ground in the fall thinking, well, I'll keep it covered up for the winter and then it'll come back in the spring. But it never did come back. So was I wrong to transplant it?
Well, no, I would definitely transplant it in the fall either way, no matter, you know, or by the fall, if you want to do it sooner. I don't know where Saugerties is. I should know, but off the top of my head,
it's next to Kingston and Woodstock on the Hudson.
So you should be warm enough for that plant to do reasonably well, unless you're up up on the Catskill Mountains there.
No, I'm on a cliff, but it's not that high. I'm really close to the Hudson.
I would say just you know, had a hard time getting through that first winter.
Yeah.
We sometimes recommend with fall planting of, you know, somewhat tender shrubs like that to plant them, water them well into the, you know, late fall, even into November these days, before you want to give up on that. And then using some kind of evergreen boughs, some pine or spruce or hemlock, whatever you might have around, cutting some of those and laying it over the top of the plant just to keep the sun off that area, sort of to keep the ground from warming up and cooling off during the winter.
And leave that all winter, leave those branches all winter?
And then in April you pull it off, and it just gives them a little extra protection for the winter.
The nursery I bought it at told me this particular plant does not like full sun. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah, we generally recommend part sun. They wilt in heavy sun in the summertime, and so they look much better in the shade as well, or part shade.
Thank you, Eileen. That was Greg Ward. We're also joined by Bob Graves, Carrie Ann Mendez, and Fred Breglia. And we go to Rob and Rhinebeck. Rob, you're on.
Hi, everybody. I am a big fan of hollyhocks, and I've been trying to grow the old-fashioned hollyhock, the singles, not the doubles, for several years, and I always get great product out of them during the season. But then I always hope that they're going to grow back, and they never do, and it's not for lack of seeds. They create seed pods like crazy. There's just so many seeds I can't imagine that they don't do something, but they never grow back. I always have to buy new hollyhocks year after year. So I'm just asking, am I doing something wrong, or are hollyhock seeds particularly temperamental? Should I be collecting the seeds and gathering them indoors and then trying to start them over the course of the winter, or rather like spring, and then transplant?
All right, who wants to field this one?
I'll try.
All right, Carrie, go ahead.
Most hollyhocks are biennials, so that means, by definition, first-year foliage, second-year flowers, third-year dead. So hollyhocks usually are pretty good about self-seeding. I think one of the things that people forget about with the biennials is when you let them seed, you can't disturb the area after they've seeded. A lot of us kind of get weed hungry. We're out there weeding, disturbing soil, and we're sabotaging the germination period, and therefore we don't get little plants germinating later in the season, and we're back again at the garden centers. We'd love to welcome you back, but you're back again to buy another biennial. And if you think about it, they're usually in their second year when you're buying them from us because they have their flowers on. So you just, I think the key is to just really make sure you're not disturbing the area around where those things are going to seed, and you should see little babies starting to come up later in the summer, if not next spring.
Should I leave the them just as is, not gather up the seed pods or anything, just let them naturally take their course?
You know, I don't gather them up. I just kind of shake the stalk, or I'll cut off the stalk and I'll shake it in areas where I want them to reseed. So that's all I do. I'm pretty low maintenance, so extreme. I just shake it fast, and then I'll watch, and I'll have lots of little seedlings the next year.
Yeah, we've had good luck that way at the Arboretum, too. We've planted them. Volunteers have planted them. They dry on the stalks when it gets late in the fall, and we always seem to get more resprouts, and we don't even get in there a lot of times to even shake them. Just naturally go through their life cycle, and they sprout back up. But maybe it's, like Carrie said, if you're in there stirring up the ground, that might –
or if it's heavily mulched, you know,
or if it's heavily mulched,
it's not a barrier.
You
could try making just a little hollyhock nursery in addition to, you know, allowing them to fall on the ground. Just taking a few of those seed pods, pick another spot, you know, work it up a little bit, and then spread them out, and then you'll know not to touch that area.
Okay. Hey, Rob, thanks a lot for the call. 1-800-348-2551. It's the Gardening Show on Vox Pop, and we go over to Deb in Del Mar. Deb, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
I don't know much about roses. I have one climbing rose that was very stressed its first year. I left it in a hot car, but it did come back. I didn't mean to. It did come back. It's growing, but it's kind of struggling, and the rose buds get white bumps on them, and then the roses bloom for like a day, and then all the petals fall off, and also the leaves have red bumps on them. So what do I do?
Well, that's interesting. Red bumps it'd be nice to know which rose it is, but red bumps are kind of on the leaves are kind of unusual. You can get some reddish pigment and some black spots sort of mixed together. There are, you know, some leaf diseases that occur. If the flowers are opening and opening brown and not performing very well and falling off immediately, the only thing that comes to mind there is an insect called a thrip that could move into the flower. They sort of feed on the inside of the flower before it's really open, and then when they open, there's just nothing happening. And that I've seen that on roses. It's uncommon, but they could be there.
The flowers are very beautiful
If you have the opportunity, Deb, Fadigans, we're over in Latham, and you're not that far away. Cut a piece of it off and bring it in.
Oh, okay.
And sometimes it's easier for us to diagnose when we're actually seeing what it is that you're seeing.
Okay, I'll do that. I've been spraying it with neem oil and stuff, but...
Which is not a bad thing to do.
Okay.
What kind of oil?
Neem.
Neem oil.
And what is that?
It's an organic insecticide derived from the seeds of the neem tree.
Okay, so the panel is pretty much agreed that it's probably an insect?
Not necessarily.
No, not necessarily.
Nope.
No.
We'd like
but
to see
neem
it.
Oil can control both diseases and insects.
And fungus, yeah.
Yeah. Right. It works by effectively smothering things.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the white bumps, we wouldn't call them bumps. We would call them sort of a white mass or little, film. They're, the powdery mildew, even downy mildew, hopefully not, can have little bit of white on the stem. But usually they don't open and look fine. Yeah. They usually wilt and die if that's the case on some of those.
This is actually like white pimples on the... on the closed bud before it opens.
Can you scrape them right off? Do they come right off, or are they kind of like part of the?
They're part of it.
They're part of the actual rosebud. Mm.
Yeah.
I think you should show
cut
Bob.
A piece to Bob.
I need to see that.
Okay. Yep. All right. Well, you've started a mystery here.
Hey, I'll be there. Thanks.
Deb, thanks a lot for the call. We're going to take a break here. 1-800-348-2551. It's the Garden Show, and back with it coming up.
Support comes from Hadley Garden Center, Hadley, Massachusetts, locally owned for over 50 years, offering annuals, perennials, nursery stock, organic fertilizer, and advice. HadleyGardenCenter.com. Cafe Capriccio, offering private catering for groups of 10 to 40 and escorted tours to Tuscany. Locations in Albany and Saratoga Springs, CafeCapriccio.com for reservations. Binney Water Ice and Spring Water, Kingston, pure spring water, coffee service, and Mountain Valley spring water delivered to homes and offices. Local and family owned, BinneyWater.com. Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Quarry and fabrication used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires. AshfieldStone.com. And Albany Institute of History and Art, presenting the making of the Hudson River School, More Than the Eye Beholds, now through August 18th. AlbanyInstitute.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Joining us today, Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery, Fred Breglia of the Landis Arboretum, and Bob Graves and Carrie Ann Mendez of Fadigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. Nice to have everybody here, and nice to have you on the phone lines. Let's go back to the phones. Mary and Charlemont, you're on.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. A friend of mine gave me a hibiscus plant. It's only about 8 inches high. It's been in the ground maybe 3 weeks, and it's really not doing much of anything. Is there anything special I should do to encourage it?
What type of hibiscus is it? Is it the perennial hibiscus?
Boy. I'm not a flower person, so I have no idea.
I'm thinking most likely it's a perennial hibiscus.
That's what I'm thinking.
It is, yes.
Yeah. What do you think, Carrie?
Well, it's only been there for 3 weeks.
Uh-huh.
Well... might just be a slow starter. I mean, I was going to say you need to water it. You probably got plenty of water on it, and it's in a nice sunny spot.
Yeah, it gets sun from 11 o'clock on.
Does it look really green? Everything looks kind of healthy?
There's some green on it, and the leaves, have brown around the edge.
Yeah, the perennial hibiscus, this is the one that is supposed to die to the ground every fall and then sprout again from the ground, so none of those stems will winter over. They are definitely... warm soil temperature lovers. They really don't do a lot until the ground warms up. That's just happening now, and you are up in the hills there, so you're a little behind, and they do need that full sun to really get the whole season of heat in order to bloom well. So I think you're right on schedule.
Yeah, and 3 weeks is that's sort of normal. You shouldn't see a lot of change in a plant that was installed for just 3 weeks.
That's encouraging.
Yeah, especially something like that does like warmer soils.
That's encouraging.
Fertilizing the plant would be the one thing I would recommend if you have not done that.
That you would recommend?
Yes.
Oh, okay, I'll do that, yeah?
Okay.
And then I have a quick question on onions. They're probably about 6 inches tall, and the tips are starting to turn brown. Is that not enough water, too much water?
Well, often the symptoms of too much water and too little water are the same.
They are.
The reason is if there's too much water, the roots rot and the leaf isn't getting enough water. And obviously if there's too little water, there's not enough water there for the plant to take up. So
okay.
You kind of have to get into the soil and determine why. And, you know, a little bit of brown tip on the end of an onion isn't going to be a disaster. But it could be too much or too little, and it depends on whether your soil is clay or sand or what it is.
Are they getting bigger? Are they growing? Is the foliage getting larger?
It is growing. They are growing, yeah.
I get brown tips all the time on my onions. I just think it's part of the deal. You know, they get a little stressed, as Bob said. You know, weather is changing all the time, too wet, too dry. The tip is the part. It's not growing from the tip. You know, they're sort of pushing out from the base, and so that's where the greatest stress is going to occur. And as long as the actual stems are getting thicker and bigger, you're well on your way.
Okay.
Oh, good. Thank you so much.
Oh, Mary, thank you for the call. So, you know, I always was interested in growing onions, and I recall maybe I made it up in my mind, but driving by a farm and it was very wet. Do you need very wet conditions to grow onions?
They like
rich soil.
Yeah,
they
rich.
Do. You know, the central part of New York and sort of the black earth area is really, in terms of the United States, is a very big onion producer.
Is it difficult to grow in your backyard?
No.
Onions
really?
We always had pretty good luck with them. Yeah.
Plant them early.
Yep.
Yeah, they like it.
That's the key.
We never get huge ones only because our soil is not that really. The more rich that bottomland soil is, that's how you're going to get those larger onion sets.
Wow.
But the smaller ones are, you know,
any
equally
of
as
your
good
root
for cooking.
Crops, you know, the richer and looser and more friable the soil is, the better they produce because they're able to push out into that soil.
You know, in all my life, living around here, I've never known anyone in their backyard garden to have onions.
Really?
Never once.
Oh, yeah. Lots of people grow them. Yeah.
All right. Fair enough. Let's go back to the phones and Lois in Del Mar. Lois, you're on.
Hey, I was told you couldn't hear very well on my speaker thing, so...
You sound fine so far.
Am I okay?
You're good.
One of you mentioned edging the garden, and I'm getting too old to bend down and do any gardening work. My knees hurt. My hips hurt. What's a good kind of tool that I could get to just be able to do some edging around garden beds?
The best tool that I've used and edged for years is my favorite, is an all-metal spade.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nothing better than an all-metal spade.
It's just a square-pointed shovel that's maybe 6 inches across, and we actually take a grinder and sharpen them.
Me too.
So it's almost like a knife blade.
Yep.
I'm an edger guy.
You're an edger guy?
I'm a half moon edger guy.
Yeah, same thing, basically.
Yes, they all work. They make power tools, though, that edge.
Hang on, Lois, go ahead.
Go ahead.
You just push it into the dirt and remove what you don't want there and make a little edge.
Well, with these metal spades, and you can get one with a wooden handle, so if it's like the metal, the metal one's kind of heavy, so if it's too heavy of a tool for you, then you might want to get like a wooden handled version of a spade. But I like heavier because it actually, you kind of just like aim it and almost drop it with the metal one.
It's like guillotine. Chipping.
It sort of cuts right through. And the goal with edging, a lot of people I find, and I could talk a lot about edging because I'm really, I've got a lot of theories on this, but... I think the main thing is to try to get that spade, the line that you're going to cut that's going to be the difference, the differential between the lawn and the garden that you're edging, that line should be straight down, kind of like a, you don't want it angled. You'd want that one line straight, and then the other cut to get the sod out, that could be angled. But that straight line is what keeps the mulch from getting into the lawn. And then when I mulch, or a garden, whatever, you want that lawn to be slightly above where your mulch would be, so that way you can put the mower deck right over the edge and you don't suck up the chips.
Yeah.
I got to jump in here for a second.
Sure, Carrie.
I'm going to go the real easy route, and I know it's not as clean and crisp, but I use MTD Yardmaster machine, like a sod cutter. It rolls on four wheels. I can set the blade at different depths. I can also set it at an angle. I can roll that baby, cuts through. Maybe it's not quite as crisp, but
I love sod cutters, so that's fine.
I can run that, and
you can also get a machine that looks a little bit like a string trimmer that has a blade on it. It works pretty well. Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. Well, when in doubt, use a power tool. Yeah.
I love the sod cutter. I don't have one, but if I had that, I'd use it a lot.
Lois, good luck. Thank you. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. It's the Garden Show on Vox Pop. Lou and Altamont, you're up.
Thank you. Two questions. The first one is regards to lawn compression. I've had arborists out on a property, and they've told me I should even avoid driving past mature trees with riding lawnmowers and so forth to use a hand lawnmower in the feeding area. Then I go out on golf courses and I watch golf carts roll by. Then I watch the city put gas lines right next to mature trees and just cut off every root on one side. What is the story if the availability of nutrients is there under the ground, but perhaps the sunlight has been eliminated by putting in a sidewalk or something of that nature?
I can't help myself on this one.
Oh, boy. All right, Fred, it's up to you.
Compression is a huge factor in plant health. So the arborists that have told you about that are not incorrect in the sense that it does play a large role in the health of your tree. Now, there's a million factors that play into that. If you have a relatively drier soil when you're mowing with a lawn tractor, driving over that tree's feeder zone on dry soil, normal day, normal soil, not going to be enough of a weight to compress the soil in typical conditions. If you were to take a pickup truck around that tree's root system, that's going to become more of a compacting issue. If the soil's wet when you're bringing in heavy equipment, that's going to compress it more. And it's not that the nutrients aren't there. The compaction doesn't take away nutrients. What it does is compresses airspace. Yeah. Roots need air. There's an air exchange process that occurs between the roots and the above ground environment. And roots are taking in air, and they're also releasing air out of their root systems, and then that air has to diffuse back into the environment. So you've got all these little piping networks, pores, that are literally becoming that transport vessel. And when you compress that, think about a sponge that's filled with holes. If you compress that sponge as hard as you can, then it doesn't hold any water, doesn't have any air in it anymore. Well, that's the same as your soil. So when you compress it to that level, you've got a major problem. And you will see a corresponding decline. Now, a lot of times that won't happen right away. It'll take anywhere 3 to 5 years, depending on how bad of a compression situation you've got.
We're more concerned with heavy equipment,
yes.
You know, with vehicles and tractors and bulldozers and things like that. Yep. Lawnmowers are typically not an issue with that.
Correct.
Certainly trenching around
Absolutely.
An established tree is always a bad idea.
Yeah.
You know, any physical disturbing of the root system is not a good thing.
Yeah. When they cut through like trenching like that, you might not notice an instantaneous decline, but that tree is going to decline.
Mm-hmm.
There's no
about a sidewalk, say, set essentially at grade, where they'll just remove the grass and cast the sidewalk right there at that level.
Well, there's a lot of research been done on that at Cornell about how to plant street trees, and there's a tremendous amount of science as to how to work. It is possible to do it properly.
That's
a lot of times it's not.
They would recommend porous concrete. That's the latest thing.
All right. Hey, Lou, thanks a lot. That's a great call. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. And we go over to Nancy in Kingston. Nancy, you're on.
Hi. How are you?
Good. How are you? Good. Are you there? Well, guess you're not doing that well after all. Nancy, call us back. Let's go to Lucy in Del Mar. Lucy.
Hi. I have a question about fungal gnats in a house in Cape Cod where they are infesting it, and how to get rid of them. Does anybody know?
Yeah. There are a few ways. Fungus gnats are obviously a gnat-like, almost like a fruit fly that lives in the soil of houseplants. Usually there because they've been overwatered, or typically you use too wet a soil or too heavy a soil. There are systemic insecticides like imidacloprid that you can put on the soil. We also use a mixture of hydrogen peroxide and water on that. And I've forgotten the dilution, but if you go on the internet, you could find that. There are also yellow sticky tags that trap them that you can use. It is possible to get a control of them, but it's often because things have been too wet or overwatered.
Well, inside a house.
Yeah, so you, do you have houseplants in the house?
Are there plants?
No, it's not here in Del Mar. It's on Cape Cod, where it's quite misty and quite close to the ocean. And they have probably come in through the screen. It's the season for them.
Are they biting?
Yeah, very badly.
Oh, those are called no-see-ems.
Yeah, that's not a fungus gnat.
Oh.
Yeah.
Those are no-see-ems.
They're not horticulturally oriented.
They're not after your plants.
Right.
They're after you.
If it bites you, it's not a plant problem.
Exactly.
No, it's terrible.
It's not my house, but,
yeah,
right. Yep. But I'm calling for a friend. Does anybody know how to get them out of a house?
Well, no-see-ems, they have a short life cycle. I wouldn't be able to tell you how many days they live, but there's a short life cycle. So the key is to getting them out is actually just stopping them from coming back in. And typically, no-see-ems, and I'm speaking from more camping experience than horticultural experience here, you want to get the normal screens in your house are too large for little no-see-ems. They'll go right through the normal screen.
Right.
So you have to get a finer screen if you really have a no-see-em problem.
Or just don't go to the Cape until August.
Yeah.
Oh. That'll work as well.
The person who lives in the house is desperate today and wants to go and get DEET. And I think this is probably a very bad idea inside of a house.
I would not be. No. I personally would recommend not chemical, going towards a finer. You can buy these at like different.
The hardware store understands how to keep them out.
Yep. It's just a finer grade screen, and then problem solved once they die off. No chemicals needed.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, Lucy, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Liz in Ballston Spa. Hi, Liz, you're on.
Hi. We're building a house up in Ballston Spa, and I had a very nice landscape plan done, and I've been preparing the beds, etc. And last fall, I brought up probably a couple hundred divisions of my existing perennial to my current home and sort of stuck them in a holding bed in the back of the property, away from the builders, etc. And I was wondering, should I really wait till fall to transplant those into their permanent home? Or could I start doing it now? Because I'm itching to get these gardens going.
Go for it. This is great to give them more time to settle in and get their roots spread out into that soil before lockdown in the fall. So this is an ideal time to start planting them and putting them out in your plan that you've got. Just make sure, especially if we don't get a lot of natural rainfall, to make sure you're watering them in every few days to help them really get those roots established. And then start to back off, depending on your soil type. Once or twice a week should be fine.
Okay.
But this is
what
ideal.
About,
get them in.
Larger, like bushes, because I did transplant a few bushes up as well. Should I wait till fall for those?
I would wait for woody plants. I would wait till they go dormant.
Yeah.
Late fall. Once the leaves drop, they're sleeping. And if you move them then, there's very little chance of them getting disturbed. It's kind of like a baby. He sleeps in the room.
Generally speaking, with woody plants, we want to move them when they don't have leaves on them,
right.
Either before they come out or after they come off.
So spring and fall are your best times.
So just the smaller perennials are okay to transplant now.
Absolutely.
All right.
Yep.
Okay, thanks.
Yep, Liz, thank you. And now, did we lose her again? Let's try and see if Nancy from Kingston, the mysterious one, is with us. Nancy, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Great. I have a Rose of Sharon hedge that's very well established, been there for many, many years, longer than I have. And last winter, I lost several trees in my hedge. And I was wondering if you have any ideas what might have happened.
Voles.
That's what I was going to say.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. One word.
That was my first.
Boy, they were bad last winter.
Yeah. We can't say that they were voles, but that's the kind of thing they do where you have, perfectly happy plants. Nothing else is really different. Mm-hmm. Last winter was not exceptionally dry, not exceptionally warm, mm-hmm. not exceptionally cold, but all of a sudden they're missing. And you know, if you when you take those up and you excavate the root system, you will see the damage, and that will sort of clinch it.
And they may have even girdled some of the stems above ground, so you could you might even see the evidence of some chewing around a base of the ones that are not growing. That'd be the first diagnostic to look at to see if you see any evidence of chewing.
And if that's the case, you're going to want to go after those voles.
All right, now, how would we do this in a nice NPR kind of way?
Well, in general, for woody plants.
I've got two very, 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 very predatory cats.
That's the best.
Yeah, don't feed them.
Generally, they're
okay.
Nice, Bob. Thanks.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Okay. A hungry mouser is a good mouser. And, Dre, I know this will disappoint you, but I'm not going to recommend bug juice for this one.
Oh, because that was a great one.
The vole juice is not, no. I'm not going to go there.
That's a repulsive thought, Fred. Thank you. Hey, Nancy, I'm glad you made it through. I appreciate it.
Okay, so you think it's voles.
Could be.
Yeah. I mean, I would just say that they usually feed on woody things like that, the root system or the bark, in the winter. So
that's
November
right.
to April is, or March even, is the real issue. So they're probably not there now. We're digging out those dead ones, kind of excavating, you know, cleaning up, making sure that the bases are well tidied up, maybe a light layer of mulch, but nothing they can really hide in. So that when you get to November, just maintaining that. If you start to see little holes, you know, they're about the size of a ping pong ball or smaller, in and around the hedge, then you know that they have returned or have been living there. And so there are some things you can look online a little bit. There are some baits that are effective that you could put in those holes.
Voles would you reckon there would be in an average size suburban lawn?
Dozens, if not hundreds.
They're very prolific.
They're like mice.
Yeah.
Yep. And they're not the same thing as moles, just to clarify to the general public.
Right, I know that. Right. Yeah.
Moles are more good.
It is possible for a Rose of Sharon to die as a consequence of winter weather in this climate, but last winter wasn't one of those winters. Greg's right.
Not several of them.
Yeah.
Like
right.
And then the sporadic dying indicates everything else looks good. Then you got a couple of sporadic canes. It sounds like we would all agree, I think, that it's most likely voles. Check to see if you see any evidence of some feeding around the stems.
I saw more vole damage last winter than I've ever seen.
I saw
seen.
A lot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Nancy,
all
thanks
right,
a
thank
lot.
You.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
And just to clarify Bob's comment, we do recommend that you feed your pets. I mean, I was
being facetious.
It's a really great idea to feed the old pets. Thank you. And we'll give you Bob's email address a little later. 800-348-2551. More coming up.
Support comes from Adams Ferriker Farms, Poughkeepsie, Kingston, Newburgh, and Wappinger. Fresh daily meats and seafood, farm fresh produce, local and imported cheeses, specialty groceries, and garden supplies. AdamsFarms.com. Smith College Museum of Art presenting Summer of Love, psychedelic posters from SCMA, art from 1960s San Francisco and the American counterculture. smith.edu/artmuseum. Lori Stillwell, CPA PC, providing tax and accounting services for businesses and their owners in Saratoga Springs and beyond. StillwellCPA.com. Mario's True Value Home Center, Valencia, New York, featuring a new kitchen and bath design center and offering weather shield windows and patio doors. True Value, start right, start here. Mario'sTrueValue.com. And Kerry Haddad Gallery, presenting Soft Focus, paintings and photographs by 8 artists with works that are intentionally blurred. Now through July 7th, CarrieHaddadGallery.com.
1-800-348-2551 is our number. It's the Garden Show on Vox Pop, and we're joined by our producer, Patrick Dunn. Just I'm going to share a microphone and let you have it here.
Hi, Ray.
All right, what do you got?
Well, we've got Jeff writing in at voxpop@wamc.org and sent a photo along that I've shown our gardeners and says, "Hi, Gardening Show. Can anyone identify this plant flower which is growing outside my house?" And Carrie, you seem to have the answer.
Well, I think we all agreed it's Lychnis rose campion. So it's commonly called rose campion. It behaves as a short-lived perennial. Some even say it's a biennial, but it tends to be short-lived. But it'll seed very easily, so you should definitely allow that to reseed. And it's a great cottage plant because it really does look beautiful. And even though it's listed mostly for full sun, I've even had those do fine in a dappled shade garden.
Okay. All right. Excellent. And Brett, commenting on WAMC.org, asked, I have a pear tree in my backyard, and year after year they get eaten up by squirrels. I've been supplying the squirrels and birds with plenty of black sunflower seeds, but are there other preventative measures I can take to keep the squirrels and birds away from the fruit? And that's Brett, and I will step out for the answer.
All right. Well, thank you, Patrick Donges. All right.
Yep. I say again, don't feed your cat. No, I'm kidding.
Now, well, can a cat take on a squirrel?
Definitely can take a squirrel out.
All right, fair enough.
Squirrels are tough.
This is like Wild Kingdom now.
But they do make a mesh, a black, very fine mesh synthetic material that you use. We use it for our strawberries.
Yeah.
I've also put it on other smaller, shorter fruiting trees. Anything that tries to feed on those fruit will get sometimes it's called tanglefoot.
Yeah.
They land on it. They don't like it. Away they go. It doesn't hurt the birds.
We also use the have-a-heart traps, the live animal traps, and catch the squirrels and relocate them. They're not hard to catch.
Relocating is a tricky thing.
Well, there's a lot of legally.
There's some restrictions on that. Yep.
Depends on how far you go. You know, it's been a real issue for us. Everyone, you know, peaches, all your fruits, and small mammals, chipmunks and squirrels,
and they're really tough.
Somehow covering the tree, depending on how big the tree is, you know, a lot of these homeowner dwarf trees are still, you know, 10, 12 feet across, if sometimes netting that, though, to keep them from getting to.
And some of the large mesh nets they can get caught in, too.
Yeah, that's why you want to go with the small.
You have some fairly fine so that the animal itself doesn't get caught.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's really inexpensive. Almost every garden center, I'm sure you guys carry it.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Michael in Saratoga's up. Michael.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two quick but different questions. One is feeding or fertilizing hanging baskets as far as the best way to do it. Mine are kind of high up, and it's very hard for me to actually get a watering can type of system, or even those nozzles that go at the end of the hose to get it that high. And although I could take them down, I've actually had them drop, and I'd like to feed them or water them actually up high. I was wondering if these granules you'd recommend, or the little stakes that you put in, is what the best way to feed those is. And the other question is just for reference, what you would recommend as far as finding out, getting information on more sort of organic gardening. I mean, other than sort of coating everything with DDT and hoping I can get something that is edible at the end of it. I've tried to grow a few different vegetables, and everything always gets eaten before it even gets anywhere near ripe, and there's nothing left edible on the plant. And I didn't know where to get some information about what to combine. I've heard using different versions, different varieties is a way to do it, but I just don't have any information on it. And I'll hang up and listen to the reply.
All right, thanks, Michael.
In terms of your question on fertilizing, one of the things we like to use in that situation is something called Osmocote, which is a time-to-release, slow-release fertilizer that you can put on really once, maybe twice in the season. And it breaks down as a consequence of microbial activity and temperature, so it breaks down slowly and feeds your plant continuously. There are devices that you can get to inject fertilizer water into your hose, something like a Siphonex or Hose-On, it used to be called, but and the spikes are good. I'm not a real fan of the spikes because you can burn roots sometimes with those. I think something like the Osmocote would be my preference for that. And, I mean, in terms of organic gardening, there's a whole lot of information out there.
There's even some slow-release organic products
that
mimic Osmocote. And using some of, slow-release organic granular fertilizers in the container would still work. They have an odor. They tend to be a little
more
fragrant, but they'll also fertilize those hanging baskets.
Yeah. They also make extensions for hoses made for watering higher hanging baskets. A lot of municipalities.
Yeah, we see them
all the time on Central Avenue. And they make those, and you can use those in conjunction with those fertilizer adapters, and you never have to move the basket, never even have to,
In terms of the organics, I mean, there are some really good organic fertilizer or organic fertilizers, but also insecticides and fungicides now, a lot better than it was, say, 5 or 10 years ago.
And generally, I think if you're failing at growing vegetables, then you may want to find someone who is a little more successful and just have them sort of run through what's, what you may be doing that's not working out. Because there are lots of things you could easily grow and you should have good success with, but it may be simply that it's too shady, it's not protected from some of those rodents we were talking about, the soil's not
really
adequate.
When you get to organic gardening, the first, foremost, most important thing is the quality of the ground. If you got poor soil, you're going to have trouble from the beginning, and you just need to improve it.
All right, let's go to Kevin in North Adams. Kevin, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
You bet.
My wife and I live in Northampton, Mass., and we had some troubles in the beginning with some of our vegetables that we are growing and in our raised beds. But our pole beans, they just took off like crazy. They've probably grown 5.5 feet in probably 6 weeks at the most. And they're doing really good, and they're really lush and really green, but we're noticing a lot of the leaves. And I talked to my local garden center in Hadley, Mass., and they couldn't figure it out. Some of the leaves are turning yellow, and some of them, the tips of them, are look like they're almost like burnt, like they're not enough water. But we've been getting so much rain, and I water them probably once every 10 days with a good nitrogen-filled organic fertilizer. And I'm wondering if this is some kind of an aphid or if this is some kind of a bug that is getting at these things. I was wondering if you might be able to help me.
Is it the old leaves or the new leaves that are turning yellow and brown?
Some of the leaves on the bottom, where it's in a deep planter, and a lot of the leaves on the very bottom in the shady part of the planter are the ones that are turning yellow. But the ones that are, there's new leaves and or some of the older leaves in the past couple of weeks. Just the ends have been turning like a brown, and they crinkle up dry and bend right up underneath. And I'm wondering if there's a bug on there that's eating and taking the nutrients out or the moisture out or what the case might be.
The leaves are cupping upward?
They're cupping underneath. They're kind of like
oh, they're cupping down, cupping downward.
Yeah.
Could be a nutrient.
If they're low leaves that are yellowing, that's probably just the old leaves are yellowing. That you know they're the ones that came out first. The weather has changed dramatically in the last 4 weeks, and so they're just going to do that. That happens with a lot of different plants. If it's the ones at the top that are, it sounds like you're saying they're singeing, they're browning and drying up.
It looks like they're singeing at the very tips. They're like kind of they're browning and drying and kind of curling under.
And so that would be the issue I would focus on. And you know. It's been raining a lot, as Carrie's been saying, but if you have raised beds and we had a lot of hot weather, it's possible they got just a little dry once.
Just last weekend would have done it when it was really hot and dry.
We've also been noticing little bites. It looks like little bites out. Now, I've put up rabbit fencing and everything else around all my beds because as I'm building them, I've got rabbits running across my yard. So I had to put up all kinds of chicken wire and everything else. Yeah,
fencing usually takes care of them.
Yeah, it does pretty well job. But I've noticed that some of it, I almost thought it was like, when I first looked at it, it looked like a blight, like there was some kind of like holes in the leaves. And I've noticed a little bit on some of the leaves in the bed itself.
It's certainly not also uncommon to have just holes in the leaves of, especially, you know, a lot of plants, but beans are pretty attractive to several insects, some of those little tarnish plant bugs like those and a few others. So a few holes, as long as they're the color of the leaves minus that little singe is dark green and they're growing well.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like there's an issue, but... you know, it said North Adams, but you said Northampton.
We're in Northampton. We're in the center of town.
I'm sorry.
So I just happened to stumble onto the program as I was driving away from my job over at Mass College Liberal Arts, and I said, I'll dial the 800 number, see if I can get in. Somebody can help me.
The other thing I'd say is if you think you're doing everything right and the leaves don't look right, check the pH. Make sure your pH is okay because you can run into all sorts of problems.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
We had gotten the dirt from a gentleman that we know, a trucking company, and it was old farm dirt full of everything. We had to screed all the dirt, and there was little to no nutrients. It dried out quick.
Yeah, you never know.
We went and we added a ton of moodoo and a bunch of topsoil and really got a really, really rich soil, but the rain compacted everything, and then I kind of mulched it with my hands for about the first 5 inches. And kind of let it set to get some air into the roots, and then I hit it with a heavy nitrogen based organic fertilizer, and everything just took off like crazy.
I would consider bringing those samples, the soil samples, and maybe even the leaf samples. You know, UMass Soil Lab is right down the road from you. You could literally drive there.
Yeah, and a pH test is a really good thing to do, especially if you've been adding a lot of new soil. Your pH could be all over the place, and that's going to make a huge difference. The cupping that you're talking about, it could be nutrient issues, but a lot of times pH will actually affect the nutrient availability. So the nutrients may be there, but because the pH is off, it won't let the plant, it locks it up, won't let the plant take it in. And the holes are almost guaranteed not related to the cupping or the browning.
Kevin, we got to move it along here, but thank you very much. We're going to go over to Joan in Queensbury. Joan, you're on.
Hi. I have, well, I have a question as a result of an earlier call. National Grid came along and topped off the main trunk of a maple tree outside, full-grown, happy maple tree outside of my house about 5 years ago, and it's now dying, and I can see that. It's dying badly. So I think National Grid killed my tree.
Oh, boy.
But anyway, I now want to replace it in a nearby location before it dies. I want to get something else going. And I'm wondering how successful I could be at transplanting a tree out of the woods. Somebody told me, forget it, it won't work. But I noticed somebody else in town has... apparently, it looks like they're going to be successful.
Okay, well, yep. Fred would be the guy to start yep. with here.
To answer your question, you can definitely transplant things out of the woods into your yard, yes. The reason why you probably have heard mixed results with this is because that natural plants in the woods would that grew from seeds have had all the years to, an opportunity to spread out freely. So all of those little plants that you're looking at in the woods have really, really wide root systems. So a trick that I have done over the years that seems to work pretty well is that you go through and kind of like pre-select which ones you want to try to move. The smaller the better, because the smaller, the greater the survival chance. But you pre-select them, and then you go around with that spade that I had mentioned before about edging tool. The spade is a multi-tool, so it's great for edging, but it also is my main digging tool for transplanting.
The real sharp one that you sharpen with a sharpener?
You got it, because what you're going to do is you're going to pre-select the plants you want to take out of the woods, go around there, and kind of like pre-cut the root ball. But don't actually try to pry it out of the ground. Just push the spade straight in, far as it'll go, pull it straight out, go all the way around. And what you've done is you've root pruned it. You've cut off those roots that were all over the forest, but you didn't try to move it so it has enough roots to keep it alive. And when those roots regrow, it'll have a higher concentration of roots near the stem. So then when you go back maybe a year later, or even if you did it now, went back in the fall when it was dormant, you'd have a better shot at having that tree live.
All right.
Aha. I have one other quick question
Very
in
quickly.
That regards. I have a Christmas cactus that I got as a small cactus in 1972, and it's now very lush and very huge and has spawned many, many babies. And it's just too big for me to handle anymore, so I'm going to get rid of it and one of the babies that's almost as big as the mother plant. Everybody that wants this thing has bad luck with plants. So it would really hurt my feelings
if I
gave it to them and they killed it after, 1972, after all these
wow.
years.
Yeah.
What should I just give it to, what should I do?
I think you should say goodbye to it.
Oh.
I just think you should.
Have a little ceremony and
have faith. Yeah. Have faith in your friends.
Okay. Well, okay, that's great. Yeah, so faith and friends. This is the philosophical portion of the program.
Yes.
Joan, thanks so much for the call. We appreciate it very much. So, I mean, what do you do?
You could divide it and have a whole bunch of Christmas cactus.
Yeah.
I'm sure she has someone she knows who can take care of it.
Okay.
But otherwise, yeah.
So getting a cat is not the answer
that's
to this.
For that one.
No? No. Okay.
Not feeding your cat's not going to help this situation.
All right. And we had an email here. Jim emailed to ask, I'm trying to find a variegated maple to put on my property. Where can I buy one? Panel.
Well, the tree that I'm thinking they're probably thinking about is probably Acer palmatum drummondii,
of course,
which is the most popular one. And
right.
I'm assuming all these guys here at the garden centers have them.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if we have them right now, but it's something from time to time that the garden center will have. Could be the tall variegated maple, too.
The Plantnoides.
Which
we don't offer in Massachusetts.
No, we don't either.
Because it becomes invasive.
Because Norway maple is on
It's
the
not reliably variegated either. It often
sometimes reverts.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, so basically...
Acer platanoides,
the Jap maple.
Drummondii is one, and Acer palmatum, there's another one as well.
All right, well, panel, here's the issue. The phone lines are absolutely loaded. We could easily do another hour on this program today. Not time for that. So how about if anybody wants to get in touch with you, we can quickly get your contact information. Yep. Let's start with Fred.
It's Fred. My email is fred@landisarboretum.org. We have a website, www.landisarboretum.org, and you can also find us on Facebook.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, Greg, and, Ward?
Yes, email is info@wardsnursery.com, and we also have a website, wardsnursery.com, that you can get that link to.
Okay, and if you go to email Fred, ask about the bug juice recipe from several shows ago. It's really quite something, and it's very tasty. All right, well, how about Bob and Carrie?
Yeah, well, we have a website, Fadigans, www.fadigans.com, and my email is r, as in Robert, Graves, @fadigans.com.
All right, fair enough. Any closing? Now, we have about 30 seconds. Any closing wisdom from anybody here?
A good time to prune. Pruning yes. season's here. Structural pruning, thinning of a lot of ornaments is great.
See,
time.
Fred, and the rule of thumb I like, see if you like it too, is to prune something when it's in a period of growth but not most active growth.
Yeah, you don't want to prune it when it's in active growth.
Right.
That's correct. Yep.
All right. Well, that's it for the program. Thanks to everybody who called in, and I'm sorry if we left you on the line. Again, phone lines absolutely loaded today. You have the contact information. Thanks to Greg Ward, Fred Breglia, Bob Graves, and Carrie Ann Mendez. Really a fun show today. We learned a lot, and support comes from Oblong Books, presenting the League of Extraordinary Readers for ages 8 through 12, featuring authors Kristen Kitcher, Michael Buckley, and Kirsten Miller, Sunday, July 14th at 4 p.m., RSVP requested, oblongbooks.com. Dam Cafe and Deli, Saugerties, New York, serving breakfast and lunch with chef-created soups, salads, vegetarian options, and homemade desserts. Catering services available, thedamcafeandeli.com. The Arkell Museum at Kenneth Johari, presenting pure photography, pictorial, and modern photographs from the Syracuse University Art Collection now through July 20th, arkellmuseum.org. And Lexington Vacuum, Albany, New York, featuring Miele, Simplicity, Dyson, Electrolux, Vapori, Vapor Cleaning, Sales, Service, Repairs, LEXIVAC.com. Thanks again for joining us today for The Garden Show. We'll do it again next month. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. The phones were answered by Brandon Holmes. And thanks to our producer, Patrick Donges. I'm Ray Graff. It's Moyers & Company tomorrow at this time. On Medical Monday next week, Dr. Jennifer Michaels. Stay tuned now for a news update.